Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode, another installment, another edition of the Sweet Nothings podcast. If you're new here, my name is Kelly and I am here to whisper said sweet nothings in your ear. This is your home of relaxed, funny and informative chats all about the love of eating. We'll talk about the latest food trends, controversial opinions and all things edible. Folks, it is February. It's beginning to creep nearer to spring and we are deep in the month of commercialized love. I'm recording this for you guys the day after Valentine's Day, and if you think you're escaping the nonsense of all of the pink, red and heart-shaped and coloured foodstuffs, you are sorely mistaken. Last month's episode was admittedly a little bit heavy, as everything in January typically is. We spoke a lot about the diet and weight loss industry and how you can kind of avoid getting wrapped up and buying into all of the horrors that it has to offer. So this month, I want to bring you something that is a little bit more lighthearted, a bit more frivolous, a bit more nonsensical, because I enjoy that kind of thing. And I think it's good for us every now and again. Pancake Day is upon us. Depending on where you are listening to the podcast from, I'm sure that if there are Christian traditions where you are or where you grew up, you will know about the concept of something like Pancake Day, like Mardi Gras, like Carnevale, whatever the equivalent is where you are. Typically, this involves indulging in sweet and delicious or fried foods prior to the kind of period of sacrifice, the Lenten period that comes just before Easter. Even if you are a non-believer, it's a fantastic time to be someone who believes in all things delicious, because whether it means you're in Italy eating frittelle, whether it means you're eating poczki in Poland, or whether it means you're eating pancakes with lemon and sugar in England, or even better, pancakes with butter and jam in my home nation of Scotland, it's about that time of year. Because of that, I couldn't help but enjoy the food trend that has been pinging around TikTok and social media in general over the past few weeks. And I am talking about the ice cube tray pancakes. Though this isn't a kind of UK-started trend, I believe it started in the US, but people have been making pancake batter ahead of time and spooning it into ice cube trays to freeze it kind of into solid cubes or solid frozen shapes of pancake batter ready to fry straight from the freezer. And I don't think I have ever admired and lusted after a food trend as quickly as I did with this one. So people have been doing it with plain pancake batter to make kind of crepes, or they've been doing it with thicker pancake batter, the kind of American or Scotch style pancakes with some fruit or some chocolate chips already in there. And with these cubes, you can throw them straight into a frying pan, allegedly, and have low and slow cooked pancakes rather than high heat cooked pancakes within less than 5 minutes. This idea is fantastic. It's genius. It doesn't even involve any fancy equipment, as these things often do. And I like it. I really do like this. It's something I haven't tried, but Pancake Day is one of those frustrating things because it's on a Tuesday. So many of us don't get to enjoy making and eating pancakes ourselves on the day. And in the UK, we don't really have a tradition of, you know, going out to buy them from some kind of specialist place like other countries in Europe have with their pre-Lent foodstuffs. So this is something that would actually be really good if you had kids or, you know, you just wanted some pancakes on the morning of Pancake Day or in the evening. But if you're working all day, if they're frozen, it means you can just throw it in without having to faff about and mess up all those dishes on a day when you're already busy and you can still have pancakes. I'm a huge fan. Do, of course, let me know how you take your pancakes. My Pancake Day pancakes are always, always, always either the kind of traditional Scottish style, the little handheld ones that you'd have with butter and jam or with Nutella or with peanut butter or with golden syrup, whatever you like. But let me know if you're more into the kind of English style ones, the big fat, I was going to say juicy, maybe not the juicy pancake, but the big fat American style ones. Let me know what you're having. But for me, it will be the Scottish ones all day long, especially as I am currently quite far away from Scotland. I will be making and forcing upon other people Scottish pancakes this Tuesday. But of course, it's impossible, as I mentioned earlier, not to touch upon all of the Valentine's Day themed nonsensical food that always pops up at this time of year. And I always enjoy. I enjoy the ridiculousest of novelty food at any time of year, but Valentine's Day in particular, because it's just such a, I don't want to say meaningless, that sounds heartless, but it's such a bland celebration. You know, there's not really any kind of traditional food stuff eaten on Valentine's Day outside of chocolates, but companies still need to absolutely, you know, pedal to the metal, ramp up the themed things that they have to sell. And some of them make sense, but some of them make absolutely no sense. But I do almost have to admire the marketing and PR team for, you know, creating and marketing these things. In terms of stuff that's made sense that I've seen this month of the edible variety, some heart-shaped macarons and heart-shaped desserts in general. Aldi have made some really nice-looking heart-shaped macarons for the UK market, but you'll also find heart-shaped pizza in Aldi or in Asda, which is something I think makes sense. It's something that can easily be shaped into a heart with no extra effort, expense, or ridiculousness, and pizza is something you can share if you're that kind of person. Same with macarons, something a little bit upmarket, something a bit out of the ordinary, something a bit fancy to share or to gift. Some heart-shaped Grana Padano cheese has been an absolute highlight for me from Lidl's selection for Valentine's Day this year. The thought of heart-shaped pieces of hard, mature cheese is definitely not something for everyone, but it's something I would accept just as willingly as I would a box of chocolates, and very thoughtful for the savory folks among us. But all of that said, there is, of course, for every good, exciting, romantic, shareable, and adorable novelty Valentine's food stuff, there's the chaotic end where companies are clearly just trying to think of anything they can wrap up in pink and red hearts to sell it to you guys. Let's talk about the heart-shaped chicken nuggets that Aldi and Lidl are offering this year. Now, you could say, much like cheese, much like pizza, it's easy to form a chicken nugget into a heart shape because it's not made of, you know, actual cuts of meat, more than just reformed paste made of a suggestion of chicken, which is delicious. Of course, everyone loves a chicken nugget, or most people at least love a chicken nugget. However, there's something about being reminded of the meat paste that makes these things being so easily shaped into a heart that, you know, it unsettles me a little bit. Also, chicken nuggets are good, but you want to put a bit more effort into Valentine's Day for yourself or for whoever you are loving in this period. I don't know. Lidl have also decided to sell some steaks with heart-shaped pieces of butter to put on top of the steak. Now, fine, steak is a classic kind of Valentine's Day food stuff. It's a romantic dinner for two kind of thing because it's a bit fancy and a bit out of the ordinary. However, as soon as you put this butter on top of your steak, it's going to melt. Will the person even see that it's heart-shaped before it goes on top of the steak? If they do, it's probably already too late for it to melt nicely all over the steak. And there's something about it that's just so last minute that just makes me think, you know, come on. However, that said, it does make more sense than one of Sainsbury's offerings this Valentine's Day being their chocolate frogs. Now, the only thing that comes to mind after Harry Potter, because to me, you know, someone born in 1995, chocolate frogs are something that you associate with Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. It's something that is very Harry Potter related. It's a Harry Potter collectible that's even sold in the real world as a Harry Potter themed collectible that would come with those Wizarding World cards. But for some reason, Sainsbury's have decided to push this as a Valentine's Day product. The only way I can think that they have justified this is the whole concept of, you know, the frog prince kissing frogs to get to your prince. But you're not kissing these frogs, you're eating them. The princess and the frog doesn't really make sense from the concept of eating the frogs gifted to you by your prince. You know, the whole idea was that you fell in love with someone without them being handsome and, you know, traditionally attractive, that you kissed them anyway, and then they became a handsome, charming prince. But apparently now we're eating the frogs or sharing the eating of frogs between ourselves and our already handsome or pretty partner. I don't really know. I feel like there could have been many, many shaped chocolates they could have gone with before we got to frogs. But do let me know if I'm missing something here. We move on then to something that I get it, you know. We love our pets, right? We all love our pets, sometimes a bit too much. And forgive me for saying this, but especially dog people. Cat people have their own stereotypes. Cat people have their own issues to work through as well. But dog people, or at least the marketing aimed towards dog people, I don't think any of us can deny goes way too far sometimes. Way too far. Dogs are wonderful. We as a race do not deserve how wonderful they are. However, there are supermarkets at the moment selling dog-safe Valentine's chocolates for your pet that come with a neckerchief for your dog saying, "I love my human." I love dogs. I adore dogs. I would love to have a dog. Our lifestyle and means at the moment do not allow for it. However, if you are going out of your way to buy a dog which will likely eat just about anything that falls off your plate, and an overpriced box of dog-safe chocolates with a neckerchief that says, "I love my human," just don't buy anything. Just don't buy anything. You know, if that's the state we're getting to, we've gone too far, in my opinion. I don't mean to be a killjoy. Buy your dog something they want to eat. Don't buy them something weirdly anthropomorphized and, you know, something to dress them in to take photos of. I don't know. It feels almost Black Mirror level commercialized to be doing that on Valentine's Day. But, you know, if you guys have done it, I can't judge. I can't see you either. So, you know, it's fine. Do you? Moving on from the food trends of this month, and there has been very little in terms of food news. It's that time of year. There isn't really much going on. We're out of the depths of the kind of weight loss obsessed part of the year, thank God, and we will be hurtling towards Easter before we know it. So no doubt next month we will have a bit more in terms of food news, but everything this month has been very much geared towards the romantic, the sensual, the sexual, if you will. And speaking of the sexual, apologising to either of my parents if they are listening. However, we are going to get into that this month. Let's talk about food that can get us in the mood, allegedly. We're going to talk about aphrodisiacs. These are something I'm sure at least, you know, you've at least heard of. You've at least heard the term before. And I thought, what better month than February, the month of commercialised love, to talk about the food that can supposedly get us in the mood for various reasons, going from the somewhat understandable, romantic, impressive, sensual, to the downright bizarre. So as we are a very respectable and scientific podcast, I have prioritized a very reliable source, a peer-reviewed source. I'm talking about an article from Cosmopolitan in which I got almost all of these results from. I told you this month was going to be fun and frivolous, so that's what we're doing. We're going to be talking about a selection of aphrodisiac foods, and supposedly these are things that will get you or your loved one in the mood for love. We begin with slightly obvious ones: champagne and red wine. I don't think anyone needs to be told that these can have, you know, mood-enhancing properties, whether they relax you, whether they excite you, whether you're one of those people who after the first sip of wine is already having impure thoughts. We've all been there. Champagne and red wine are on just about every list of aphrodisiac foods, and I get it. If you're opening champagne, it's likely it's a good time. You know, we can open a bottle of red wine or various other kind of alcoholic beverages for other slightly more depressing reasons. But I think if you're opening champagne, if you're opening Prosecco, it's already probably a good occasion. So I can understand how this is one that would get people feeling good, feeling in the mood. Red wine as well, it's a very luxurious drink. It's a very very bold and strong tasting drink. It's something you're not sipping lightly the way you would a vodka and lemonade. You know, the vibes are somewhat different, so I get this one. That's followed closely by ingredients such as chocolate and vanilla. Also very much understandable. Chocolate is something that is full of mood-enhancing properties from, you know, going into the kind of flavanols and things that are found within dark chocolate and pure cocoa, to the simple mixture of fat and sugar that makes milk chocolate so bloody deliciously addictive. Most people love a bit of chocolate. It's designed for us to enjoy. It's very luxurious. It's very easy to gift. It's very nice to receive. Of course, this is going to put us in a good mood. Similarly, vanilla is a scent that, you know, it's used even in perfume. It's used in kind of in sprays for your house and things like that. You'll even see it in fabric softeners, as well as being used as a sweet kind of background note in just about everything. You'll see it in so many desserts. You'll see it as an ingredient in loads of different chocolate bars or sweet treats that you buy straight from the supermarket or from the bakery too. It's a smell and a flavor that we love. And even though it's generally considered one of the more boring flavors, it's exotic, it's luxurious. And I can understand how this is something that people would enjoy and feel somewhat enticed by. We move further down the list to things like black truffle, though not everyone's keen on truffle. It's a little bit more of a divisive flavor, even if it is very luxurious. Some people don't like the kind of earthy, mushroomy smell it can give off. And in doing some reading for the podcast this month, I found that apparently black truffle is appealing to some people because it smells vaguely like a male pheromone, supposedly. Do with that what you will next time you have it shaved over your pasta. Strawberries and cherries are something else that came up a lot in kind of looking at aphrodisiac foods. And this, again, I kind of get. There's something very appealing about dark cherries. There's something about the shape, about the flavor, about the color that makes sense. Same with strawberries. They are sweet, they're delicious, they're light, they're fruity, they're easily dipped in chocolate, they're easily shared. There's something that is beautiful to look at as well as beautiful to eat. And they go along with the very stereotypical red and pink themes of Valentine's Day and all things romantic, you know? They make sense. On a similar color scheme, we have the chili pepper. A little bit daring, a little bit spicy, a little bit enticing, hugely off-putting for some people, with digestive consequences for most. But it's something that, you know, could spice up your life a bit. If someone can handle their chili, maybe that's something you're into. Maybe that kind of punch of flavor will wake your taste buds and other things up if that's the kind of thing you're eating on Valentine's Day or any other day. Coffee would have a similar effect. Apparently, I mean, not apparently, I think it's a smell that most of us love. It's a smell that I think most of us would wear as perfume or aftershave if we could without it being a bit too weird. It's something many of us need to get us going in the morning. So I can imagine for the same reason that with chili or with chocolate, it would have, you know, getting going purposes at other times too. Though, depending on what time you like to engage in those activities, it's a bit problematic if you're going at it in the evening, but you know, if you're in the need to stay awake for multiple hours instead of sleeping, you know, it would have that benefit too. Figs are something that came up a lot, and so did pomegranate. And again, while there is nothing sexually suggestive necessarily about figs or pomegranate, there's that kind of flavor of the exotic, that out of the ordinary thing that, you know, a pear or an orange can't really offer in the same way. Very seasonal, very Mediterranean, very warm climate kind of things. Pomegranate seeds look like jewels anyway. I think they're naturally very enticing for that reason. Figs, sweet, a bit kind of complex in their flavor, beautiful color, again, easy to share, very charcuterie board or dessert platter kind of thing. I get it. Honey is a common aphrodisiac, apparently. I love honey. A lot of people aren't into the smell because it can smell a little bit like pollen, or it can smell a little bit like plants, and not everyone's into that. But there's something about the consistency of honey that we use in enticing ways too. When you see it in adverts, when you see it in recipes, you know, there's almost something a bit medieval about the appeal of honey. I think of Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings when I think of honey flavored things as well, you know. So I can understand how this is one that, again, is an ingredient that's not the cheapest. It's one that suggests a little bit of luxury, and people like that kind of thing when they're thinking about getting in the mood too, you know. Less so for me, as we come hurtling down the list, are oysters. Again, it's the luxury thing. It's the expense thing. It's the out of the ordinary. It's the thought of being able to crack open one of these gelatinous little things and slurp them down ravenously with a loved one. I get it. I do like an oyster. Are they ever top of my list of things I want to eat? No. Is there a particularly easy and dignified way to, you know, swallow one whole with raw onion on top again? Not really, but apparently a lot of people are into that. Apparently it's something that has been used for decades to centuries as a bit of an aphrodisiac for the physical properties it has too, but, you know, you do you. We move on to some fruits that didn't really make as much sense to me as the ones higher up the list. Watermelon, avocado, and banana all apparently have aphrodisiac properties, whether for the stamina they can allow with, or the nutrients that, you know, help blood flow a bit more easily to the parts you need it to flow to. Yes, in terms of actually sensual, I don't really know. Watermelon is a completely orgasmic experience on a hot day when it comes straight from the fridge. I can attest to that. Avocado, I'm less certain of. Banana, even less so. Banana, yes, it's phallic. Yes, it's sweet. Yes, it's creamy. Does it get us going? Are you eating avocado on date night? Are you peeling open a banana on date night? I don't really know. I think of bananas as like a first thing in the morning before you go to work or before you go to the gym kind of food. It's a snack, you know? I don't really know. Similarly, we move on to almonds and walnuts. Those, to me, are like, this is a terrible, terrible pairing of words, but I'm going to say it anyway because it came into my head. Those, to me, are punishment nuts. Nuts of repentance. You know what I mean? When you think of nuts that you eat deliciously for pleasure, I think of Brazil nuts, hazelnuts, salted peanuts, roasted cashews, even pecans in a pie. Almonds and walnuts are blander, they're more nutritious, they're a bit more eh. They don't really have much flavor or texture to add to things as other nuts do. And so the thought of a handful of walnuts, I just think of dietitians, I think of nutritionists, I think of people who are trying to, you know, enjoy wellness and treat their body fantastically. And to some people that could be very sexy, but, you know, to me some toasted hazelnuts is a lot more sexy, but they weren't on this list, sadly. We move on to rocket and basil, which again, I think of not so much as punishment nuts, but very light, very summery, very, you know, health-favouring foods. Rocket and basil are both delicious, both very fragrant, and apparently are good for, you know, promoting healthy blood flow, very important for all kinds of activities that aphrodisiacs would potentially lead to, depending on how your night is going, or your afternoon, I'm not going to judge. But there's, you know, is there something sexy about a salad? Is there something sexy about a spicy herb? Maybe for some of us, maybe for the vegans. I'm just joking. Olive oil and pine nuts and salmon are also on this list as we come hurtling towards the somewhat more grim. Olive oil, you know, has had its purposes for both physical massage and, you know, comestibles for a long, long time. Again, it's something very light, it's something very health promoting. It's an ingredient that doesn't make me think aphrodisiac. It's not something particularly luxurious compared to the other ingredients or components on this list. Pine nuts, in terms of their price range, an absolute luxury, the same with salmon. But all of these things just, again, feel like things that rich people eat when they're trying to be on a diet, you know? And salmon, there's something about fish in general, much like the oyster thing, that doesn't scream lovemaking to me. Pine nuts either, because anytime I've seen pine nuts, they're used in, you know, pesto or salad or in torta della nonna. And while those things are delicious, do they scream sexy? You tell me, because I'm not 100% sure. We come further down to spices, specifically cinnamon, ginger, and saffron are all kind of considered particularly enticing in terms of aphrodisiac properties for blood flow, for general health, and for, you know, good mood inducing. Cinnamon puts me in a good mood any time that I smell it, but it's more of a nostalgia thing. Ginger, I think of cold and flu medicine. I think of gingerbread at Christmas time, or, you know, curry. And saffron, I can imagine, because again, it's a bit luxurious, it's a bit expensive, but spices in general aren't really something that I would think of when rushing to form a plate of aphrodisiacs, you know, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe in certain cultures or, you know, in certain dishes that have these kind of properties, that these spices are the kind of things you would have high up on your list. Do let me know, I'm intrigued. But we come hurtling even further down the list to an apple. An apple is apparently an aphrodisiac. Again, punishment food, in my opinion, unless roasted with sugar, unless baked under a crumble topping or some buttery pastry. Yes, it's shareable. If you slice it up and share it, of course it can be romantic, thoughtful, but sexy? I don't really know. It's a fairly bland fruit. It's one, again, that I think of when someone's trying to be, you know, particularly well-behaved in terms of their diet for whatever reason, so it doesn't scream sensual appeal. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe some people have a thing for the smell, for the flavor, for its properties. Who knows? Similarly, sweet potato and pumpkin are apparently aphrodisiacs. Maybe in the autumn months particularly, I don't know. Sweet potato is delicious. It's very good for you. It's very filling, full of vitamin A for helping you see in the dark, and maybe that's why. But does it scream sensual? I don't know. Is there something particularly sexy about a plate of, you know, mashed sweet potato, roasted sweet potato? Maybe if you really, really love sweet potato or pumpkin. But I think of these as very kind of heavy, comforting, delicious autumn and winter foods rather than something to bed down with. But maybe that's just me. We move on to, even more bizarrely, garlic. Watching out for the vampires in your life, or, you know, people who are particularly sensitive to the smell or flavor of garlic. I do not understand those people personally. I am a garlic lover. I am more than willing to taste all things heavy with garlic. However, it's such a notorious breath ruiner that to me it would be like having tinned tuna on this list, or, you know, stale coffee. It's something that you would imagine would ruin a mood rather than make it. Maybe if you're both having garlic, it doesn't really matter. There's no judgment involved. Who knows? But the last two things on this list baffle me even more. That even if these have the most life-changing aphrodisiac, love life-enhancing properties, I don't understand. The last two I have on this list are celery and asparagus. They don't look good. They don't smell good. They can taste good if treated with love, but imagine. Imagine from all of the other possibilities you had to make a meal, to make even a platter, to make a little snacky board of all things aphrodisiac. You could have had shaved black truffle. You could have had dark chocolate. You could have had chili peppers, figs, honey, even a banana if you were feeling a bit more budget. But to be offered celery or asparagus would feel like an insult. Celery is something I've never liked. I can see it as a cooking ingredient. I understand its use, but that flavorless, watery crunch is the last thing I want if I'm having something that's supposed to be romantic and luxurious. Similarly, asparagus. A delicious food when eaten in season, and when cooked well, very, very tasty and very good for us. Much like celery, perhaps that's the whole point. However, Asparagus is a food that, much like garlic's effect on our breath, asparagus has an effect on other parts of our body that if you eat it or have ever eaten it, you'll understand. Sugar puffs, or what were called sugar puffs, I think they're now honey monster puffs or something, have a similar effect that you wouldn't think would scream sexy and attractive. It has an effect on a part of our body that, you know, might not be the thing that you would want during those kinds of occasions, but maybe for some people, yes. Or maybe the effect it has on our mood, on our health, on our stamina, on our blood flow is more important than, you know, making your pee smell funny. I don't know. But those are all apparently foods with aphrodisiac properties. Some I can understand, some I can entertain, some I am deeply confused by. If someone handed me, you know, a plate full of walnuts and told me all of the things that they can do, you know, I'm not really going to understand it. If they do the same with celery, I'll be downright insulted. But maybe that's on me. Maybe our standards for champagne and red wine and chocolate and black truffle and figs and all things luxurious and expensive and exotic are the problem. Maybe we all just need to be eating more apples to improve our love lives, our marriages, our dating prospects. Who knows? But whether you ate any of these things this Valentine's Day, whether you're planning to dish up a plate with one or all of these ingredients to your loved ones to see if this kind of thing works, do let me know. Personally, I'll continue to, not to avoid some of these ingredients, but personally, I'll keep them fairly bottom of the list. But others, you know, maybe it's not a bad idea to incorporate a bit more vanilla into our lives, a little bit more chili, a few more strawberries when the season arrives. Maybe it's not a terrible idea. And I do also like that there are examples from every season of the year here, meaning that, you know, don't just keep it till the cozy months. Don't just keep it till bikini season. Keep that love life active all year round, even if it means having to add saffron to your sweet potato. If you guys know of any other aphrodisiacs or you have any opinions on these, as always, drop me a comment on social media anywhere at Maverick Peking or shoot me an email, because I'm always entertained by your thoughts on these things too. But I'm afraid that is all I have to talk about. And I was going to say touch upon. We might be hitting things too on the nose with that. But that is all I have in today's episode. Something a little bit more daft, a little bit more free and easy than last month. And I hope you enjoyed and probably have even seen more examples of ridiculous kind of Valentine's Day and novelty romantic foodstuffs this month. I certainly have. I always do. As I said before, we are hurtling towards springtime, which I'm sure many of us are pleased about. We're hurtling towards the novelty Easter period, which will bring more carrot, egg, rabbit, and bunny-shaped things than we are mentally or physically prepared for, and I look forward to it. But I hope you have enjoyed this one. I hope you had a pleasant Valentine's Day, whether you are in love or not. And I hope the rest of the month treats you well. Thank you as always for listening. Go and enjoy some aphrodisiac foods within your budget and seasonal possibilities, and I will see you for the next one.